Morning, Happy New Year. Welcome to the first study session of 2008. We need to excuse the mayor. He's out of town. He'll be returning later this week. And we have six items on our agenda. The first is to review the items on the agenda for January 7th, 2008. And I want to make sure that I'm working from the right.
I didn't get an update.
Was there an update? I only got one. Just want to make sure we're all working. So we're all working from the same pages. We're good. Okay. All right. Doesn't look like there's anything on page one. Page two. We've got a couple of public hearings for proposed annexations. 4C was off the consent agenda. And Jenny, you already knew I was going to ask about that, didn't you?
Yes.
Or somebody was going to.
4C is the applicant has not applied for their building permits yet. It's a total renovation for this establishment, and so our recommendation would be for denial.
Tell me how this fits into the context of the discussion that we were having previously.
Sure. Previously, we came to the council to ask that those applicants that have new construction applications for a restaurant or a bar license at new construction would not have to get their building permits prior to the council's recommendation for approval of the license. And this is a renovation. It's an existing establishment building, and they really need to go through the whole building process, get their building permits. So we've received a recommendation both from building safety and the fire department for a recommendation for denial.
What's the process in terms of their notification of neighbors with an existing building? They're doing a remodel. The use isn't really changing.
No, the notification process is not changing. There's a 20-day requirement from the state, per state law, to put a notification up at the site. And we have done that for this location. We haven't received any protest.
Okay. Questions on this one? This is your district. Did you have any? All right. Okay, we'll leave it off consent. Thank you. Moving on to page three. Anything there? Page four, still have contracts. Hey, we can go through this fast. Page five. Page six, we're at the introduction of ordinances. Yes, sir. Mr. Summers.
I had just wanted to ask a quick question on the Rhodes Junior High pool rehabilitation. Are we on budget for that, and how are we looking for the addition of a pool out in East Mesa?
Good morning, Vice Mayor, Councilmember Summers. We are currently working on the design of the project. I think we came back last fall with a proposal to add an amenity to this project. We are currently looking right now on budget. We are coming in with about 60% design plans in the next month, with the exception of the amenity. There are still discussions going on the Flow Rider amenity. We're working with Waveyard to get an amenity that works with their proposed facility as well.
In terms of being on budget, as Beth said, this facility is on budget, as well as we're working on the Keno project. Those two are designated. We do have money then left over in our quality of life money for a third project out in East Mesa. We've had discussions with Mesa Public Schools, and we anticipate we'll be back to the council in probably the next 30 to 60 days to talk about a potential location on that. We, as you know, in our discussion in December about the budget, there are some hits to the quality of life program as well because of our heavy funding of police and fire personnel in that area and some of those costs increasing, but we still anticipate that we will have some reserves available that we can then share the cost with Mesa Public Schools for a facility out east.
Okay, I'll be just asking that question when these pool rehabs come up to make sure that we're keeping on funding so that we have something for that east side. Also, a little off topic, but Gilbert Public Schools has approached us for a future IGA for pools at some point, but that'll be a little ways down the road. Thank you.
Yeah, I had a board member from Gilbert speak to me as well. Okay.
I just want to clarify, too, when you said that there was some extra money, it's money that was already earmarked for aquatics.
That's correct.
Clearly already there.
Councilmember Jones, that's absolutely correct. We had set aside significant amount of money to do that we had originally identified for a downtown aquatics facility that we then set aside to do the rehabs at various locations. Rhodes, Keno, and this additional pool on the east side are part of allocated quality of life monies. Correct.
I just wanted to maintain that clarity. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Anything else on this item? Okay, anything else on page 6? Move on to page 7. We're still at the introduction of ordinances. Page 8. Looks like we're going to have a busy second meeting in January. Page 9. Yes, Mr. Summers.
On 6N, I was watching P&Z the other day, and a neighbor of this particular development stood up to speak, but she was a little too late. So we may have a speaker show up, we may not. I'd just like to make sure when we have that council meeting that we ask if there's anybody that wants to talk about this issue. Also, John, do you know who that was? Did she come forward and leave her address?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Summers, we did have a staff member go speak to that person.
Was her issue resolved?
I believe so, but we'll check and see. And
all
I
right, think let me know beforehand. Okay. I'm not going to pull this off the agenda. Yeah, it's just introduction anyway. Thanks.
Okay, anything else on that one? Page 10. Page 11, we're in resolutions. Page 12.
Vice Mayor?
Yes.
I have a conflict on 7H prehab. A new
7G relief. As well?
Yes.
Okay, so 7G and 7H are off consent for Mr. Whalen's conflict. Anything else on page 12? Page 13, we're now at the actual public hearing on ordinances. Page 14, 8B, the mayor took off. That's the council use permit on the sign at Fiesta Mall. Anything else on that page?
I have a question on 8D.
Yes.
This talks about a bank. It doesn't give the bank's name. I have a customer that's going to be moving to a bank, and it's Gateway Commercial Bank. Would you check and see if that's potentially the same thing? It's Gateway Nordy, but I believe it may be Gateway Commercial. If that's the case, I've got a problem.
Okay, so we're going to check into 8D. Thank you. Anything else on page 14? Page 15? Let me go back for 1 second, John, to the annexation cases that are coming forward. We've gotten some contact, I'm sure everybody did, about annexation from the county when somebody has a single property and, you know, how does this impact everyone else in the county? It's been, I believe, the council's perception on this or the council's desire on this to allow property owners to make their determination, and we've actually worked pretty hard to make it so that property owners can make their determination. What are the legal things involved with a neighbor coming forward who says, I don't want you to go into the city, I want to make you stay in the county?
Vice Mayor may need the city attorney's help on this, but I don't know that a neighbor really has much to say about it if an individual meets the requirements of the city and move
Is
forward with that
annexation. Is there a legal protest? Or?
Not that I'm aware of for an annexation.
Well, certainly they can come speak at the public hearings for the ordinance, and when they are, when we're adopting an ordinance, that would be subject to a referendum. But no, they don't have a right to protest or to challenge, assuming they are not included in the annexed property.
All right, because with zoning cases, if you're within a certain distance, you can file a legal protest. So I wondered what happened with an annexation. If you're within a certain distance, can you file a legal protest?
I don't believe so. I'd have to check the statute, but I don't believe that that portion of the statute applies to annexation, Vice Mayor.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Whalen.
Vice Mayor, on 9A, question for the city attorney. Allen Consulting Engineers are the engineer on this project. Mr. Allen's a customer, not his business, but his home. Is that far enough remote not to declare? Or you want to check and get back to me?
Yeah, Councilmember Whalen, can I speak to you? And we'll talk more about the relationship and make a determination.
Okay. All right, we'll make note
of
that.
Busy month.
Good. We're glad for you.
All right. We're finished with item number one, unless anybody else has anything else on the agenda. We'll move on to two, which is to hear a presentation and discuss the police department's end-of-year report, including the crime statistics. And we all should have a, looks like a copy of your PowerPoint here.
Yes.
Thank you, Chief.
You're welcome.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Good morning, Mr. Vice Mayor, and good morning, Council members. What I'd like to do is I'd like to go over a PowerPoint presentation with you today. It contains a variety of information, including kind of the highlights of crime reductions and other activities the police department engaged in during the year 2007. The first page here, what you have basically is the three circles, and this is basically what we have used as a guide for focusing our police activities during 2007. And what that represents is basically our 10% concept, which basically deals with 10% of the suspects commit around 50 to 55% of the crime. 10% of the victims account for approximately 60% of the victimization. I'm sorry, 40% of the victimization. And then we have high-risk places, which generally are the place where about 60% of the crime occurs, and then high-risk activities. What we have done is basically to simplify the way that we focus our activities on is we have taken those three circles, we overlapped them, and where you see where they intersect, that's kind of the area where we have told our people that that's the area that we're going to be concentrating on. That really has to do with efficient use of resources. We will never have enough police officers to deal with all the crime problems. So what we want to do is we want to deal with those people that are most likely to be accountable for most of the crime that occurs in the city, and that's where the 10% comes in.
Chief, may I interrupt you for one
Yes.
second and ask for clarification of that? You don't mean Mesa will never have enough police officers. You mean no city will never have enough?
Nowhere in the world.
Okay, I just want to make that really clear.
I have traveled throughout this the world enough to know that there's never enough police officers to deal with the entire crime picture.
Thank you.
So going back to going to the next page, what you see is basically the results of our crime reduction efforts. If you notice, we and those numbers, by the way, are as of November of 07. We have preliminary numbers for December, but they remain very close to the same. We believe that we're going to be closing the year with approximately a 5.41, 5.42 reduction in Part 1 crimes, and those are all serious crimes. As of the end of November of 07, we were looking at around a reduction of about 1,132 Part 1 crimes. We believe that that rate will continue through the end of December. Our Part 1 arrests increase roughly about 22% through November. Actually, we're going to close the year somewhere around 18-19%, but as of the end of November, those approximately 741 additional arrests for Part 1 offenses. And we had approximately 18,000 arrests for other miscellaneous offenses during the year. Traffic collisions were reduced by 6%, and that was approximately 514 less collisions, and then our fatals were reduced by about 45%, and that was about a 20 fatal accidents less than the prior year. Another way to illustrate the point here is we use some graphs, and the first one talks about the crimes, and as you can see, the red lines in your presentation there are 06, and then the blue represents 07. Moving down the line, we have the similar graph that to depict our crime arrest information concerning Part 1 crimes. And then we have traffic accidents. And finally, we have our fatal accidents. By the way, I think it's important to point out that a significant part, we believe, of the reduction in fatal accidents was we were very focused in those areas where we had experienced fatal or serious collisions in the prior years. There has been a reduction in fatal collisions in other parts of the state, but if you notice that our reduction has been much more significant, so I think it goes beyond legislative efforts. I think there was also a very focused attention to the areas where we were experiencing most of our collisions. I think also using the cameras in our intersections was probably also a contributing factor to the reduction in fatal collisions. here's another way to look at where we are in our crime picture today. And what we did is we took the total number of crimes per 1,000 residents, and that is generally a yardstick that is used to look at police performance. And as you can see there, and we're using population numbers that were provided by the planning division of the city. In 2007, we are using 461,520 residents in the city. Our total Part 1 crimes were projected to be about 22,142, and we believe that that is right about where we're ending up the year, and that will be about 48 crimes per 1,000 residents, and that compares to about 51 crimes per 1,000 residents for the prior year. Next thing I'd like to discuss very briefly is the partnerships that we engage. We believe that a lot of our success during the year had to do with working very closely together with many other people in the law enforcement community. Certainly, we work very closely with other cities in this area here. We created our Fusion Center that opened up in September, and we're anticipating, frankly, that the Fusion Center is going to yield even greater results in a way since it will be fully operational for an entire year. Basically, what we're doing is all the East Valley cities have come together. We're housing this crime information center in the city of Mesa. On a daily basis, we're sharing crime information. We're sharing suspect information. And we have already seen significant results as a result of this partnership. Another thing that we have done is we have teamed up very closely with a variety of federal agencies. And one of the ones that we have talked about before has been with the ATF. And our violent crime impact team. That team has been operational in the city now for a year. And as you can see, those numbers below are the numbers that were provided by ATF. And by the way, the worst of the worst is a term that ATF uses, but basically is akin to our temper centers. These were 15 people that were arrested as a result of this, that were the worst of the worst, were really bad people that were operating in the city. The total arrest as a result of the VSIT were 60 and 8 gang members and 49 firearms that were recovered. And when you look at the kind of people that we're talking about, when we're talking about this particular level of arrest with ATF, we're talking about people that are very violent prone, people that are out there trafficking in weapons, people that are engaged in significant activities that can lead to homicides and aggravated assault. So these are people that, these are very critical arrests, and they're not simple arrests. Many of these cases take a long time to develop, so I it's really important to understand the significance of the work that has been done with the VSET. Other partnerships include ICE, and as you can tell there's the highlights, starting with the Operation Black Autumn, which was a gang suppression project. This particular operation yielded about 136 arrests. 85 of those were gang members. 7 were undocumented foreign nationals that were gang members. There were 3 other illegal aliens that were miscellaneous. That were arrested for miscellaneous charges. That was one of the most significant anti-gang operations that we engaged in 2007. Those folks that were targeted for this particular operation, again, we were targeting our temper center, and those 85 gang members that were arrested were from several gangs in the city that were heavily involving violence within the city of Mesa. Other activities with ICE, as you can tell, is Operation Coyote Inn. That's an operation that we started working when I first came here in September of, about a month after I got here, September of 2006. That particular operation yielded a total of about $1.5 million in fines that were levied against 13 different motel owners in the city that were operating as drop houses. And the city of Mesa will generate approximately $400,000 in as a share of those fines, and that we anticipate that money will be coming in to us sometime before the end of the spring.
We have some questions for you. Sure. Councilmember Whalen.
Morning, Chief. In the Operation Coyote, is there follow-up to determine how successful we've been? Is closing some of those motels down or cleaning them up?
Yeah, absolutely. We know that those particular motels had to sign an agreement. If they get caught again in the smuggling-related operations, they will be shut down completely. Also, they would probably entail significant incarceration for the operators. And by the way, we have not, we're continuing this operation. This is an ongoing operation. This is just the results that we had as of November of last year.
Let me follow up on that. Does that death penalty, so to speak, for the business continue on if they transfer the ownership to somebody else? Suppose they transfer it to their spouse or to their brother-in-law or somebody like that.
Right. You know, any time that there is a straw purchase of a business after you have this kind of activity, you always have to go back and you have to, if they do engage in criminal conduct again, then obviously you have to research and see whether it was a legitimate sale or whether it was simply a straw purchase of the property. If it's a straw purchase, then you can obviously use that as additional evidence in the prosecution of the case. But it becomes very complex. You know, this particular fines that you see here were a result of settlements between the U.S. attorney and the various parties involved. These are very complex investigations, and each of them kind of stands on its own. They're very fact-sensitive. But certainly we look at the possibility of whether you had a subsequent purchaser that was just a straw purchaser in order to be able to mitigate the potential risk of continuing to involvement in criminal activity.
Thank you. Councilmember Summers.
Chief, when you're working with ICE and you're taking some folks into custody for being here illegally or undocumented workers, are we paying for the jailing costs, or does ICE, the federal government, picking that up right away?
Right. As soon as the if the detention is based on an immigration-related status, then the federal government pays for the detention cost.
Okay. What is our current cost for detention?
Our current cost is approximately $189 for the first night, mm-hmm. and then it's about $80 and approximately $80 every night thereafter. We pay for all misdemeanor offenses. If it is a felony offense, then the state reimburses the county.
So if we take somebody into custody for a misdemeanor offense and investigate their legal status, we're going to pay for the incarceration, or do we get reimbursed?
If the predicate offense is a misdemeanor that is a state misdemeanor, we're paying for that.
Okay.
Until we complete our investigation and our prosecution.
Okay. And if they're found to be here illegally and we turn them over to ICE at some point, do we get reimbursed by the federal government for those incarceration? For that incarceration investigation, or no?
I don't have the answer for you. I believe, and I'll find out for you, but I'll get back to you. But I believe that so long as the predicate offense was a state misdemeanor and they were prosecuted for that misdemeanor during the time that they are being held for that process, I believe we're the ones that incur that cost.
And that would be $189 a night, $80.
10%, correct. But I'll find out for you to.
That includes the green bologna and the pink underwear, right?
Well, it's okay. Pretty expensive stuff.
It's too early for a joke.
And, Scott, that's why I, last time we had this discussion, I recommended that once the ICE puts a hold on somebody that we've arrested for a misdemeanor, that we then bring that person back into our court and release him on his own recognizance. He's still going to be held in jail, but the only reason he'll be in jail is because of the federal hold. And then the federal government will have to pick up that charge rather than us. You know, it might take us 6 weeks to process that misdemeanor, but actually after they put the hold on them, after the first week, that extra 5 weeks ought to be on the federal government's tab. If we can create the system to get him back into court and get his release conditions changed.
The only problem with that is if ICE is processing the individual, they just put them across the border within 24 to 48 hours. If we're holding them because we want to prosecute them, it's two different stories. We pick up the bill if we want to do the prosecution. Now, the problem is, and we have seen this over and over again, where people get deported very quickly.
Right.
We don't get to finish our investigation. They come back within a week or less. And we actually have evidence of cases that unfortunately people have been deported by other agencies. Well, we had an investigation. We lost track of our investigation. They were deported, and they were back and engaging in significant criminal activity within less than a week. I mean, you have to understand that if they're criminally connected, they're going to come across the border back and forth very easily. You know, they have the networks in order to do so.
Let me clarify then my basic assumption, because it could be wrong. If we're prosecuting somebody for a DUI, and we've got them on $1,100 bond that they can't post. And then we determine through our investigations that they're an illegal alien, we notify ICE, they put a hold on him. Does that hold not go along with the... What happens if we do release him on his own recognizance, then they're going to deport him right away?
Well,
then
I
appreciate the clarification, because sure. I've had an awful lot of clients in my life who have been in custody for... But I guess most of those were probably felonies that they were. Did they do the same thing for felonies?
Well, felonies are, the state takes care of the cost.
No, I know, but they don't, the federal government doesn't deport people who are in our facilities.
They may, it depends. In some cases, they may prosecute them as a criminal alien and then send them to federal prison.
They're trying to keep their jail costs down, too.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
And just to bounce off that, I wasn't saying that we should be releasing folks who have serious misdemeanor felony charges, just the minor offenses were.
Yeah, and I wasn't suggesting that we release them unless we know they're going to be kept in custody because of the federal hold. But what the
right.
chief is saying is that that federal hold turns into a very expedited deportation process, and we lose our ability to complete the prosecution, to complete the criminal investigation, maybe leads on other crimes, other activities. So, okay, I appreciate the clarification.
Basically, what the hold is saying is, once you get done with this person, do not release him. We'll come in and we'll
right.
come out.
Right, okay.
But there are some crimes that we want to hold them and they need to go to jail, and there are other crimes that are minor and they just need to go
right. away. But
no, home.
Right.
And this is the complexity of the situation that is often overlooked when we're having the discussion, is that we have people that we want to make sure it isn't that we want them deported, it's that we want them in prison. We want them off of our streets, and we recognize that deportation, as you said, Chief, frequently results in their turning around and being back here within the week, committing violent crimes again.
Again, generally, if they're criminally connected, if they aren't just simply here working, they are going to have the networks to get across back and forth very quickly.
Well, you're hearing a message from this council that we want those people in prison. We don't want them merely deported. We want them taken out of the way of harming people.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, continuing on in our work with the ICE, as you can tell from September 4 of 2006, and that's about the time that we started with Operation Coyote Inn also, we place a Mesa police detective. It's embedded within the ICE organization. And since then, through November, we've had about 116 times that MPD has initiated incidents where ICE has come in. These are ICE numbers, by the way. These are not our numbers. They have responded to drop houses, gang members, and criminal activities, and Part 1 crime arrest. That has led to approximately, and again, these are ICE numbers, approximately 500 arrests that have been that were conducted between September of 06 and November 30th of 2007.
Chief, are you going to talk about drop houses at all later on, or is now the time for me to ask my question?
Yeah, please ask now.
What kinds of things can you tell us about that you are doing to proactively go after drop houses, and are you using the same sort of I'm going to use my phrase again, death penalty kind of things against somebody who owns a property, or are we using RICO statutes or anything like that to go after the properties of these individuals who are knowingly complicit, or even after the first time of being warned, get involved again with a drop house on their property?
Generally, the prosecutions for these cases are left to ICE. They carry the expertise, and they carry the statutes that are most applicable to anyone that has been engaged in a for-profit activity dealing with smuggling, and that's how we went through the Coyote Inn operation. With the drop houses, I am not aware of any time that ICE has actually gone after the owners. Most of the time, the same owner, it does not, you don't go back to the same house. You know, once the house gets burned, that's over. It is probably very difficult to show that a owner of an absentee landlord especially had knowledge of how the house was being used. So most of the time, once the location is burned, then that location is never used again. And frankly, there is not a shortage of low-cost housing that lends itself for this type of operation. So usually what you have is we either get notified by a neighbor or our officers during an unrelated investigation run into activity that leads them to believe that you have a drop house. At that point, we notify ICE, we conduct an investigation, and then we take it from there. But most of the time you're not going to see a prosecution about against the owner of the property. There usually is a one-time offense, unlike in the case of the motels where they had a regular ongoing operation.
Chief, if somebody thinks that they have a drop house next to their house or located in their neighborhood, to whom would they place that call?
They call us. They can call, you know, our communications. And most of the time, frankly, we'll get the call through 911 or just a complaint call, and we respond to those.
So we want people to call. If they've got that situation, they could call the police non-emergency number, which is 644-2211. Did I give the right number? 644-2211, which is the police non-emergency number,
right.
and let the operator there know, the person who's triaging the calls know, that they believe that there's a drop house
right.
in their area.
And when we get those complaints, you know, we respond to them. Many times we'll get, the complaint will come in even through other means to us. You know, they'll come to the police station. And we do want to respond to those places. First of all, generally speaking, what you have is you have a bunch of people that have been kidnapped. Under very unhuman conditions. You have really unspeakable crimes that are being committed sometimes in those locations. Women are being raped, people are being abused, and quite frankly, in some cases, we've had homicides that we believe have been related to a drop house operation.
Thank you. Councilmember Summers.
Chief, just a point of clarification. When you said burned, I assume that means raided.
Yes.
This is a police term?
It has nothing to do with the fire
going,
term.
Huh?
Yeah.
Well, that'll take care of it.
Yeah.
I was looking at the stats, and our arson went up, and I went, well, that's probably why. The cops are burning them
down. We do speak different languages, don't we?
Apparently. It got me all happy. Last number I had, we had 25 drop houses raided in cooperation, Mesa PD and ICE, and that was in September. Do you know what that number is now?
You know, as a matter of fact, I'm going to confirm that number for you. I just sent an email to try to get the confirmation of that number.
Okay, I'm interested in hearing. But the last number I had was 25, right. And I think that was in September when we did it.
I just want to confirm that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Any other questions on that page? All right, moving on.
Okay. Other partnerships that we have engaged, we have with DEA, we have both some of our people that are embedded with task forces, as well as we have a DEA agent that is now embedded in the city of Mesa working our major narcotics investigations. Also, we have personnel that are embedded with the FBI, and primarily what we're doing there is we're working both gang task forces on a regional basis, as well as working anti-terrorist activities. And then we have our East Valley Gang Task Force. On a monthly basis, we trade information concerning gang activities. Another thing that we recognize that in order to be effective in fighting crime, we have to go beyond the enforcement area. We also have to look at areas that we can get engaged in the prevention or the mitigation of the likelihood of crimes occurring in the first place. And we have had several partnerships with our community that we believe are being very effective, and some of them, quite frankly, are showing tremendous results already. One of them is the MESA program, which is Making Every Student Accountable. This is a program that we started a little over a year ago. It's a pilot program working in partnership with the school district, and basically what we have done is we identify youth at risk, and once we bring the kids into the program, we bring the kids and the family. We have now gone through two classes, and what we do is we actually have a curriculum that is tailor-made for this young people, that it includes not only dealing with the academic problems that they're having, but also dealing with peer pressure, dealing with all kinds of problems. We also bring the parents into the fold, and we provide them with parenting classes, and we make them more aware of all the pressures that the young people are being subjected to, and we engage them in the school community. We have now completed two classes. The first class, actually, we had the parents and the kids became mentors to the second class. Now the second class has just been completed, and we're getting ready to start another class in January. Our goal eventually is to have several hundred kids involved in this program. We have completed approximately 40 young people have completed through this class. The first group, in fact, we were able to provide them with summer jobs, and we got a grant from the federal government that should be coming in this year sometime of about $500,000 that will be to help this program continue to evolve.
Chief, what kind of statistics are you keeping? Are you going to do some sort of longitudinal study on this?
Yes, actually, the school district is tracking the kids. As a matter of fact, I was sharing with Mr. Brady yesterday. I just got three letters from a school principal and the kids and the grades of some of the kids. And it was really rewarding to see this. Were young people that were really absent a significant amount of time. They were failing all their classes, and all of a sudden they're getting C's and B's and in some cases even A's. And they're engaged in the school process. When we started this, we had some kids that were at a special school for problem children. They have been, since then, they have been reintegrated into the regular schools. So we believe that this is working really well. The school district is tracking them before they got into the program. Now that they're on the program, they're going to continue to track them all the way through graduation.
Okay. I know it's early in the year, but I think you get the acronym of the year award for this one.
Well, you know, I cannot take credit for that. Actually, one of our employees, she was having a gathering with some family members, and someone that is not even a city employee is the one that came up with that name. We call it a juvenile impact program in L.A. It's really what we just brought her over, but this is really a great name for this program here. Okay, we also have worked in community prosecutions, as you're well aware of it. The other thing that we're doing is we have, in 06, we set up community forums. And as you can tell there, we have a variety of special interest groups that have engaged in this program, anywhere from ethnic related to business, clergy, disabilities, and seniors. These groups are coming together on a regular basis. They're being an integral part of our strategic planning and how we deploy people and the things that we do. Some of the groups are already started their own programs dealing with youth intervention, and it's evolving, and it's something that we're very proud of and that we believe that in 08 will continue to grow and help us in our crime-fighting efforts. I know that back in September there was a discussion about Reed Park and the Opportunity Zone there. And there were some statistical information that was provided to you that was, and we really don't know how that came about, but there were some mistaken numbers that were given to you. And we just wanted to clarify this for you. For the Reed Park Opportunity Zone area, from January 1 of 2007 through September 30th of 2007, there was actually a reduction in calls for service by 4%, and there was a reduction in Part 1 crimes by 4%. I know that you were provided figures that talked about an 18% increase, I believe, was the number that you were given. We really cannot account for that, but basically these are the numbers. And we believe, actually, that by the end of the year, the reduction in Part 1 crimes for that particular area, there will be approximately 11%, which will be almost 5 or 6% higher or greater decrease for the rest of the city. Some other partnerships that we have. Each of our stations now has what we call a community policing advisory board, and this are at the local level. The forums are more at the citywide level, whereas the CPAPs are at the station level, and that's a group of business people and neighbors that actually work with the local commander in order to develop strategies and prioritize problems within that particular station. This is a program that is becoming very successful, especially in the Dobson area. We have a really great CPAP. They have actually been heavily engaged in strategizing deployment of police personnel, and we believe that they have really kind of setting up the model for the rest of the city. This, again, is another program that we started in late 06. It's worked very well in 07, and we're really looking forward to a continuous improvement through 2007. Our volunteer programs, Mesa has been known
Chief,
for.
Yes. Pardon me. Councilmember Jones has a question. Yes.
I just want to compliment you on that. I went to the Dobson program just last month, and it was very nice to see how responsive it is, and Commander there is doing an excellent job working with that, and so I commend you for that program.
Thank you. Yeah, they really are. They're very good. A lot of the operations that have been put in place in Dobson have been a result of those discussions with the community members. Basically, what they do, quite frankly, is they look at their crime problem. We tell them very clearly what the resources are, and they prioritize where should we, and we kind of negotiate where the resources are going to be placed. And frankly, that's the epitome of community policing.
But it's also the participation of residents knowing who they're talking to, who they're working with. They're more comfortable when they phone in and, mm-hmm. and address suspicious things. So it's making an impact.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay. Our volunteers program continues to be a success, and that is something that has been going on in Mesa for many years, and the program continues to flourish. Frankly, one of the things that we're looking for in 08 is to actually increase the number of volunteers. We have approximately 130 very active volunteers today, and our goal is to continue to increase the number of people. They're donating thousands of hours every year, and quite frankly, doing things that we would be unable to do with our current resources. Some of the other things that we have concentrated on is technology. We recognize that we have to be smarter about the way that we do business. And COPLINK, which is something that I believe by now you're all familiar with, we have been talking about this for quite a while, is becoming a reality in Mesa. It's actually operational now for the city of Mesa. And our goal is to have, we are becoming the node for the East Valley. And every other city in the East Valley has agreed to purchase into the program. And our goal is that by the middle to the latter part of somewhere between the summer and the fall of 06, I'm sorry, of 08, all the East Valley cities will be hooked up into our node. We're also hooked up with Tucson, and we're being hooked up with the Orange County node in Southern California, so we'll have access to all the California information as far as gang activity and criminal activity. By hooking up to Tucson, we have also that piece of the state, and certainly we'll have all the East Valley information here. We're also working with the city of Phoenix, so our goal is that eventually we will be able to reach into everybody's database when we're doing criminal investigations and assess when we have multi-jurisdictional crime patterns that are occurring, and we'll be able to expedite our investigation and put the bad guys in jail quickly.
And you're thinking, Chief, that will be fall of this year, that you'll be that far, or is that the ultimate?
Well, that would be probably at the latest. We're hoping even sooner. All the Chandler, Tempe, Scottsdale, and Gilbert have all already allocated funding for this process. And now what we have to do is work with a vendor in order to get them hooked up into the system. Part of the problem is that not all of us have the same record management system, and some of the systems are very antiquated, and those systems require more work. For this instance, in the case of Gilbert has the same records management system that we have, so the getting Gilbert on board is going to be very simple. Chandler has a lot of legacy systems that have to be updated, so that will be a little slower, but we have been assured that at the very latest, by the fall, everybody will be hooked up. Quite frankly, the best case scenario could be that by the end of the spring, everybody will be on board.
Thank you.
The other thing I think is important to kind of highlight again, and again, I know you've heard me talk about this stuff, but really one of the driving strategies behind all of this is the use of CompStat. It's a process where we look at information. We try to assess information very quickly. We're one of the things that I've been fighting for, and we're still not there yet, but I hope to be by the end of 08, is that we'll have real-time information that actually our COPLINK node, for instance, will be updated every 5 to 7 minutes. So as soon as a crime occurs and is reported, it will show up in a map, and we'll be able to see that it's there. Another thing that we're doing through our CompStat process, we start peeling the onion and really get into the causation part of the crime, so that we can assess what are the areas that we can be most effective with in order to reduce crime. I'll give you, for instance, one of the things that we're doing is we're working in partnership with several of our local retailers. We know that shoplifting is a big drain on resources for us. It is not a significant crime in terms of, you know, violence or any other problems to the community, but if we have police officers that are tied up dealing with a shoplifter, that takes them away from dealing with other problems in the street. As a result of CompStat, we were able to identify particular retailers that were more likely to have shoplifting activities in their businesses than others. And we took that information back to some of those folks, and we actually we worked out a partnership where they're actually engaging very heavily in the mitigation of shoplifting by altering their retail activities, the way they merchandise things, and the way they profile their security within the store so that people notice that they're there as opposed to being mostly undercover. The bottom line is that we're looking for ways to reduce our need to be engaged in this activity is by preventing it in the first place so that we can turn around and get that full-time equivalency to working other problems in the city. Again, the driving force behind CompSat is looking at real information, not working on anecdotal stuff, really analyzing what are the causes of the crime, and then identifying within those what are the things that we're most likely to be effective ourselves, or where can we go to someone else in order to get help. This is also going hand in hand with our Six Sigma project that we have started a couple with Motorola. We're basically looking at numbers and trying to deal with factual information as opposed to anecdotal or emotional information. We're focusing where we believe that we can be most effective, and frankly, I believe, I'm very optimistic that in OA you're going to see significant results that will actually make our crime reductions much greater than what they were this year. In conclusion, what I'd like to say, yes?
Councilmember Whelan.
Chief, you got a CompSat meeting coming up this month?
Yes, we do.
When is that, do you know?
January 11th, next Friday.
Next Friday. Members of the Public Safety Committee, I'll get with you later, but might want to attend.
Absolutely, and if you let us know ahead of time, we'll make sure that you get a book and you're sitting at the table. Our meetings are open to the public, by the way. We welcome the public to our meetings. Media attends regularly.
Might be fun to do one on television sometime for the public to see how they work, maybe in this room. I don't know if you could work that out.
We're at a city facility now. For a long time, we were not, but we're not a city facility, and I believe...
Are they wired for that?
I don't know
if that will. Yeah.
It'd just be a good informational program.
Sure.
Let the public know what we're doing.
And certainly, if not, we could probably do it here, too.
Thank you.
And to city management, would you please make sure that you get that meeting next Friday posted as an open meeting for the...
If more than one show.
Yeah, I'll check the work.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. In conclusion, what I'd like to say is that basically we believe that we have done really well this year, but frankly, I think that 08 is going to be a much better year. We have been able to reduce crime where many other parts haven't. We have had a significant impact in traffic collisions, and we're working with the community, and we're bringing a lot of people together in order to work towards making Mesa a better place to live.
Thank you, Chief. I've got a couple of questions, comments that I've written down along the way here. I'm assuming now is the correct time to bring those forward. First of all, Councilmember Jones and I were speaking with a very involved resident of his district the other day, and she made the comment that she really appreciates when officers take names when they go out, even if they're not citing people. And apparently one of the officers was asked, well, why are you asking for my name? And he said, because then when I come back, I know who to hold accountable. And she said it was profoundly impactful that this person felt like they were going to be held accountable. And I believe in this instance it was a loud party call, but that was very good. The experience that I have had in having officers from your department go out with me to neighborhood meetings where there have been issues that have been involved is that they've been very responsive, getting back with the neighbors, working with the neighbors very quickly. So I want to thank you for that. I think that the most important thing that I have seen over the last year is captured by so many of the things you're doing here, which is that you are sending a very strong message that criminals and cell phones... You'd think my family would know.
Yours sounds better than mine, though.
Yeah. Criminals know that they're not welcome in Mesa. And I think that there are 100 different ways that you're sending that signal. But one of the important ways that you're sending that signal is by helping residents to feel like they are welcome to call the department and convey their concerns to them. Because I know that we have had some issues in the past where people have felt like when they called, and I had this said to me over and over, and I have to say I haven't heard it for a while, and I'm very glad that they were bothering the police department when they called. And I don't want our residents to feel that way. If they've got a concern in their neighborhood, they should feel welcome to call the police department.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Other comments? Councilmember Rawls.
Chief, I appreciate everything you're doing and improvements and everything, but I quite frankly have got to the point where I'm fed up on a subject and I want to speak about it. And it's probably one of the first study sessions that was going to be short, but I'm going to take about 5 minutes to talk about something that is disturbing me a great deal. Since April of last year, we have been receiving emails and public notices and all sorts of male bovine excrement about the treatment that was accorded, or about an activity of a detective in our department at the state capitol, Matt Browning specifically. And I didn't really pay very much attention to it until recently when these emails have started circulating around, and they've now been posted on the web, and people are now emailing me and other members of the council, I believe, advocating that we fire you, that we clean out the entire department, that Mr. Brady be tarred and feathered for hiring you in the first place. And I just think it's time to set the record straight. So with the permission of my colleagues, I'm going to do so. Actually, I'll do it without their permission because I have the floor. And it's consistent with the agenda, which is boasted. The first thing that needs to be laid to rest is the illusion that we are a sanctuary city. And I believe between what you did at the last presentation, Chief, and what you put in here this morning, it's pretty clear that we're not. We have officers embedded with ICE. We participate in drop houses. We participate in arrest of people, illegal aliens. We participate in arrest of smugglers. We participate in the finding and seizure of assets of those people who were involved in smuggling. In fact, we are very aggressive in our pursuit of the criminal behavior that goes on in this city, including violation of the federal immigration law. We have, however, asked the chief to draw a couple of lines, and those lines were drawn by us, not him. And I think it's important for people to understand that. One of those lines is, we said, we don't want you asking victims of crimes or witnesses to crimes about their immigration status, because we want that information. We need that information in order to be able to arrest and prosecute violent criminals. And we don't want to do anything to have that information source dry up. So we basically said, Chief, don't instruct your officers to ask about immigration status and people who are reporting crimes and who are witnesses to crimes. To me, that makes perfect sense. That does not make us a sanctuary city. That makes us a city that is dedicated to protecting all the citizens in this city from all different kinds of crimes in this city, and we don't want to do anything that hampers our ability to protect those people. Secondly, and this has not been without division on this council, we have, although we've asked the federal government to cross-train our detention officers under federal immigration law, we have not asked the federal government to cross-train our street officers engaged in street investigations. Again, that was a policy decision made by this council, not Chief Gascon or, in fact, Mr. Brady. And we did that for probably three reasons, if I recall correctly. One is, we don't want our officers sidetracked and distracted from their other duties. We don't want them taking the extra 40 minutes that a contact takes to investigate immigration status. We want them out protecting against collisions, citing fast drivers, and solving and deterring violent crime in the city. Secondly, what you can and cannot do in a immigration investigation is very complex, and the laws are extraordinarily complex, and there's lots of liability associated, or at least potential liability associated, with what you do and what you don't do, and whether you do it correctly and whether you don't do it correctly. The federal government is the entity that is ultimately responsible for that. They're the ones who should provide the training and assume the liability, not the city of Mesa. But again, I think it's very important for people to understand that this idea of a sanctuary city is not only false, but even if it was true, it is a result of decisions made by the people on this side of the table, not Chief Gascon. And I, frankly, am getting a little tired of having everything that goes wrong with the city of Mesa's police department, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, attributed to his personal views on immigration. Because quite frankly, I don't give a crap what his personal views on immigration are. I really don't. Because he doesn't set the policy. We do. Second thing I want to talk about is the difference in the treatment attributed to Detective Brown because of his comments, Detective Browning because of his comments at the Anti-Defamation Democratic Caucus, and the conduct of Sergeant Doherty in terms of what he did. And I want to discuss those a little bit because there's so much misinformation out there. I think it's important to get it out there. Detective Browning gave a speech based upon his professional opinions and his professional experiences and his professional observations. During that speech, he said, no doubt he said this, some of the people in the anti-immigration movement are racist. He said that some of the people in the anti-immigration movement are bigots. He said that some of the people in the anti-immigration movement are white supremacists. He didn't say all of them were, but he said that some of them were. And I don't think that's a fact that anybody can dispute. Now, I quite frankly don't like it. You know, but I also recognize that those people have the God-given, constitutionally protected right to be racist and bigots and white supremacists if that's what they choose. I don't want them to be, but they have that right, and I'll defend their right to do it. And Detective Browning actually went one step further. He called some people in the anti-immigration people, a movement, domestic terrorists. Now, he didn't say everybody was a domestic terrorist. He didn't even say all the racist bigots and white supremacists were domestic terrorists. He said those people who use violence in the furtherance of their political agenda on the immigration issue are domestic terrorists. And I believe that is 100% true as well. If you use violence, illegal violence, to promote your political agenda, you are, in fact, a domestic terrorist. I don't think Detective Browning did a thing wrong. I think the Internal Affairs Department of the City of Mesa, after an exhaustive investigation, came to the same conclusion. I don't think Chief Gascon had a thing to do with that finding. Now, the other officer chose, while dressed in a Mesa police officer uniform and a Mesa driving a Mesa police car, to make an obscene gesture to, on two occasions, a group of protesters. Those protesters were exercising their constitutional rights of free speech, free assembly, freedom of association, legally and peacefully. You know, when Thomas Jefferson said in the Declaration of Independence that the purpose of government is to protect our rights, as a Mesa police officer, Sergeant Doherty was part of that state, part of the government, and his job was to protect rights, protect freedoms, not to express his personal opinions about what they were protesting or what they were demonstrating for. I don't care what they were demonstrating for. But his job was not to express his personal opinions about it while dressed in a Mesa police officer's uniform and driving a Mesa police car. You know, the debate that we have in this country, the differences that we have in this country on immigration are good and healthy. But the people who protest it, the people on either side, the people who want everybody to be shipped home and the people who want to grant asylum, the people who argue with President Bush and Congressman Flake and Senator McCain on one hand and Senator Obama and Hillary Clinton on the other hand, those are all good, healthy things. They're not domestic terrorists. They're not racists. They're not bigots. They're not white supremacists. They are people exercising their constitutional rights in a rational manner. But when a police officer in uniform decides to take it upon himself to express his personal distaste for a particular view, that officer is in fact wrong. One of those officers was not punished or disciplined, the other one was, pretty mildly in my view. When I told my wife about this yesterday, she said he should have been fired. He wasn't. He had to attend some sensitivity training, as I understand it, and he had to write a report about what he'd learned. But let me just say this. The different treatment that was accorded to those two officers has nothing at all to do with Chief Gascon's personal views on the immigration issue. I, quite frankly, don't even know what Chief Gascon's personal views are, and in fact, I already said I don't care, because he's following orders, orders that we give to Mr. Brady, that Mr. Brady gives to Chief Gascon. That's how it works. And so people out there, and I wouldn't have said this, but for the fact that this has now hit the internet and we're starting to get emails and stuff from people all over the country, you know, give it a rest. Look at it rationally. Look at it reasonably. And you realize that, A, you've got bad facts. B, you're drawing bad conclusions. And I just want everybody to know in this room, in the Mesa Police Department, in the city of Mesa, and across the country, and whoever else is reading the internet, that I support the different treatment given to those two officers, and I support the efforts that Chief Gascon is making on behalf of and in the Mesa Police Department. And Chief, you have my vote of confidence, and I hope you keep it up.
Thank you, Councilmember Rawls. Also, I think it's important to note that what Detective Browning was speaking to was a combination of knowledge that he gained through a 12-year period where he was investigating crimes that had occurred in the city of Mesa. Detective Browning was not working undercover within these groups in order to assess their ability to congregate together, their First Amendment rights, their right of association, their right to express their views. Detective Browning was actually investigating violent crimes that were occurring in the city, including homicides. And those investigations led him to follow individuals that have been members and are active members of these organizations. Browning was not there to do anything that had to do with the right of those people to come together to express their political views. Browning was investigating individuals that were believed, and today we still believe, are involved in serious violent offenses, including a homicide, possibly more than one. Secondly, I really appreciate your distinction between what we did with Browning and what we did with Doherty. But it's important to know, actually, that the training that he was given was not sensitivity training. He was, no, that's okay, and I appreciate that, but I want to make the distinction. He was actually assigned to spend about a couple of hours with a Arizona State University constitutional law professor who spent time with Doherty to teach him about the role of the police in dealing with the First Amendment. And then he was asked to put together a lesson plan to share his newfound knowledge with every other patrol officer in the city. And he was required to attend 46 different briefings and share that knowledge with every other Mesa police officer that works patrol. So it wasn't about being sensitive or not. It was really understanding that the Constitution and certainly the First Amendment trumps any personal feelings that we may have when we're on duty. And I appreciate the fact that you don't care about my views on immigration because they're really not important. They really are not important. There are many laws that I enforce and that I have enforced throughout my 30-year career that I personally disagree with. Whether I agree or not is not the issue. Does it make sense? Is it legal for us to enforce it the way that it's being enforced? Do we have the resources? Are we attending to the greater issue, which is the overall public safety of whatever community we're policing? So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Councilmember Rawls. You know, Tom, over the years, you and I haven't agreed on everything, but your defense of the Constitution has been absolute, and it's a privilege to serve with somebody who cares so much about the Constitution applying equally to all people, and so thank you for your comments there. This is an incredibly emotional issue for people, and I think because of the emotion of it, they would like to make it something simple, and it is not. It is something very complex, and I appreciate your staff, Chief, focusing on crime, and that's why I made the comments that I did to you about criminals not being welcome in our community. You have been absolutely staunch in that, and the message that you have sent has been powerful, and it has been disappointing to get emails from people around the country who have no idea about what you have done to work on reducing crime in our community and help make the residents of Mesa safer. So, Daryl, you had your hand up next, and then Mike.
Our interaction with our neighboring East Valley cities, have we tried to outreach to Queen Creek and Apache Junction? Because they were noticeably absent from the list of those that we are networking with.
Yes, we have. They were offered the opportunity to be part of the Fusion Center. They declined. Certainly Apache Junction was also offered the opportunity to be a member of the East Valley Chief, and they have joined that piece. But the offer is open. Quite frankly, we're still working with the reservation of Salt River. We're working with the Salt River government in order to get them to join the Fusion Center. It is open to all East Valley police entities.
We have a joint meeting coming up with the town of Queen Creek, so there may be a couple of points that we may want to bring up in that joint meeting with the council of the town of Queen Creek relative to some of these cooperations that we're extending.
Vice Mayor, Councilman Truitt, the Queen Creek does not have its own police department.
Oh, that's true. They're using the
right.
Sheriff, And but they soon will, I think.
They will soon have their own fire department, which they've just sworn in.
Yeah.
I don't know that they have any plans currently to add a sworn police officer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Tom, I wish that somebody would YouTube your speech. maybe a few people would understand it better. George, I've told you many times that I think you're doing the right thing on your policies. Today, I think, is a good chance for this council, myself, to tell you in public that I think you're doing the right thing. You're doing exactly what I want you to do as far as immigration enforcement and crime enforcement. And they go hand in hand because there are some bad folks in our immigrant community. There's some good folks. We want to concentrate on those that are doing criminal violations unless some law tells us that we're going to do it different. People talk about rule of law. You're following the rule of law in what you're doing. And I think that's where the whole thing gets mixed up, because people don't really understand the rule of law. It's an issue that this council's been dealing with for the last 8 years. When we came on board in 2000, we went to Washington and said, help us, folks, we got a problem. They didn't even want to talk to us. So it's changed a lot in 8 years. But as far as the public in Mason needs to know, I believe you're doing the right thing, and I support your policies. Thanks.
Thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
Chief, what is the relationship with the sheriff's office? I know he's been in Mesa exercising his right to enforce laws, but as far as the conflict is concerned, the sheriff's department is not included in that. My district and Councilmember Truitt's district surrounds a significant portion of the county, and it would be beneficial, I think, to reducing crime in our districts if the sheriff's office was involved in this particular project.
I believe the sheriff's office made it public, and I'm only going to quote what was stated by one of the local newspapers, that they had no interest in joining the fusion center.
Okay. Maybe we need to reapproach them somehow. I don't know. Maybe it's through Queen Creek in our discussions there, but I think they would, I know they would be a huge benefit if we could get the sheriff's department involved in that for my district. So.
And they're certainly welcome to.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Brady, do you know which sheriff's department is enforcing in Queen Creek? They're in two counties.
Primarily it's Maricopa.
It is Maricopa.
Very small.
Yeah, it's okay. Very unincorporated or undeveloped.
Thank you. Councilmember Jones.
I just piggyback on what Tom was saying. All the emails and so forth that we've been getting is obviously there's a lot of misinformation out there, and it's disheartening when people jump to conclusions and make irrational statements. And that's, I call them irrational because they are. But for me, results is a lot stronger than rhetoric, and we've seen results here today. And the bottom line is, in the course of normal police work, when you come across an illegal immigrant, they are addressed, and that's the point to be made. Instead of the perception that's been created nationally that we look away, because that is not the case, and it's absolutely untrue. I do appreciate, as has been stated, your great work and what you've done. I believe the morale of the department has improved tremendously. As I've been talking with officers, there's been tremendous improvement. Statistics show it, and it's greatly appreciated. Residents, we've had some residents who have been very negative towards the police department in years past, and that's been turning around in some neighborhoods, and that has definitely made a difference. So I'm looking for improvement in all the statistics you showed us today, because I think it's going to happen. And so in that regard, it's truly appreciated. I'll just stop at that. But again, results is a lot more important to me than rhetoric. So thank you.
Okay. I'd like to make one more comment based on something that Mike said. The reason that we hear from people so much on this issue is because they are as frustrated as we have become. What Mike talked about in 2000, when we went back, and I got handed this charge, we had the Day Labor Task Force, we got all the recommendations, and one of the primary recommendations was to work with the federal government to get a resolution to this problem. And I looked at the mayor, I still remember this, I was sitting over where Daryl is right now, and I said, no problem, Mayor, I'll get this taken care of within the year. how naive we can be when we're new to something. But I went back there. I talked to people. Several of us went. We talked to people, and they didn't want to talk to us. They didn't want to talk to us about immigration issues at all. The next year, which was pre-9/11, at least we were able to have some conversations, but the conversations were good luck. There really wasn't an interest at the federal level to do anything at that point. And so a couple of us started going in a different direction. Kyle Jones and I have worked very hard with National League of Cities to try and organize all of the cities to go at the federal government and say, this is your responsibility. You need to take this on. You need to enforce the border. It is not appropriate to have a border that is porous and that people can just come across. And so what the frustration that we have felt in trying to get our federal officials to respond to this is mirrored by people in the community. And they are very frustrated, and we are much more accessible than the people at the federal level are. So much of what you hear is that frustration, that anger at an unwillingness to do something. I think to have it focused on you, Chief, when you have done such an amazing job at focusing our resources, which are not as large as we would like them to be in a community of this size, on getting the most violent criminals off the street, on taking care of the worst crime, on trying to prevent crime, and your statistics, as Kyle said, numbers speak for themselves, and I like the talking that they're doing. So thank you very much. Is there anything else before we let the Chief go? Councilmember Jones.
I wanted to say one more thing on the statistics. And you pointed out when you presented it, a lot of that information regarding illegal immigrants was ICE statistics. It's not something you created. It's correct. Their numbers that you were reporting.
Correct. Yes. All the statistics dealing with the arrest and responses by ICE to the city are their numbers, not ours. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chief. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We'll move on to item number 3, which is to acknowledge the receipt of meetings of various boards and committees. I have a motion
second.
And a second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Here are reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Okay. scheduling of meetings and general information, Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Just remind the council, we have our next council meeting will be Monday, our first council meeting of the new year will be Monday, January 7th. The following study session, January 10th at 7:30. And please note that January 17th, which is a Thursday, we will be canceling the study session. That morning, the East Valley Partnership is sponsoring the Breakfast with the Governor. So thought that most of the council would like to attend that, so we've canceled that. Another change in our normal schedule is that because of the MLK holiday on Monday, January 21st, the second council meeting in January will actually be on Tuesday, January 22nd. And then, as was mentioned earlier, the following day or evening, January 23rd, Wednesday, January 23rd, will be the joint meeting with the Queen Creek City Council at the ASU Polytechnic campus, and we'll get that information out to the council.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. I'm assuming that the thing with the governor, this has become an annual tradition to have the governor in the East Valley. Is it at MCC again?
Yes,
I believe so.
Thank you. Mr. Whalen, did you have?
Just that the MLK holiday, I think that I know they've asked me to be the MC, so if you have any material that you can give me to liven the thing up, I would appreciate it.
Sure.
And yeah, there you go. My eyes have seen the glow. So, and there is a reception, I think, for council that weekend. It's either Saturday night or Sunday night, and I will get you that information with their guest speaker. Thank you.
Thank you. Items from citizens present. Do we have any speakers?
No requests, Vice Mayor.
All right, I'll take a motion
for
adjournment. All those in favor, please rise.